Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
We always like to have our guests do a little myth busting, because you know the Zeitgeist is full of myths, and culture is full of myths. And Howard, is there something from your experience, like a cultural myth or phenomenon, that you can kind of take down for us today?
Well, yes. I'm originally from the state of New Jersey.
Hey, the Garden State.
That's it. And a lot of people, when the show Jersey Shore came out,
right,
they go, oh, that's what New Jersey is like.
Right.
And then there's a backlash because people are like, that's not what New Jersey is like. But that is what New Jersey is like.
So you're here to eliminate the myth that New Jersey is not like the Jersey Shore, because it's exactly like the Jersey Shore?
Well, let's say this. Those people are everywhere. You
right.
can't escape
right.
those people. So like, they're not the only tribe of people there,
right.
but they are
but
everywhere. And so they definitely, they affect daily life every day. And, the way those guys are, the animal way in which they behave and stuff, like, that's everywhere, but it's not really a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's when you're there and you live there, it's just kind of funny.
So you weren't there with the fist pumping, gelled hair guys. What was your tribe in Jersey?
Oh, I was just like me and two friends that like punk rock. Like, there was just like, there was nobody else who liked it.
So it was just an entire state. It was just the you three holding it down?
Pretty much. I mean, there was one guy like three towns away who had his hair spiked up. Like, there was just like...
And you heard about him. You're like, hey, you heard about that
guy
in Red Bank?
Yeah,
with
exactly.
spiky hair?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen him. Amazing, amazing.
But yeah, I grew up in that Red Bank area, so that's, yeah.
Oh, okay. See, yeah. I only know that because I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan.
Oh, okay.
So that knowing that area is like, oh, what's going on in Red Bank, New Jersey?
Yeah, yeah. My sister lives like a mile from that comic book store.
Oh, nice.
And Springsteen lives over there. It's like real big Springsteen country.
Well, and another thing, too, is I was saying I'm from the San Fernando Valley, which is like LA's version of New Jersey, where
right.
people who live in LA proper like to say shitty things about the valley.
Right, right.
So to people, like, what happens when you meet people who don't know anything about New York, New Jersey, and just go, oh, you're from Jersey?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have like a built-in defense mechanism or a statement you give?
Like, I'm not defensive about it because I wasn't super like into being there. Like, I listened to Born to Run. Baby, this town rips the bones from your back. It's a death trap. It's a suicide rap. We gotta get out while we're young. I was like, that's right.
So yeah, I guess so. Jersey is a terrible place.
Yeah. It's not terrible, but I'm glad I'm from there, but I wouldn't go back just for even the weather, now that I'm used to the weather out here.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I don't defend it. It is what it is.
We're just gonna talk about taxes real quick. We don't have time or infinite energy to get into all the many, many details. The tax plan that they are passing through is probably going to repeal the individual mandate. So they're taking money that would be spent on healthcare for, you know, millions of people
that are in need, who cannot right, afford healthcare.
Who cannot afford healthcare, and moving it elsewhere. But there was a really revealing quote from Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, one of the just most egregious parts of this. And it's not one of the details that is actually going to cost people all that much money, but they are repealing what's called the death tax, the inheritance tax, which is basically a tax on the 5,000 highest income Americans. So people who, when they die, are leaving behind over, I think, $11 million. That money is extra taxed because that's a shitload of money.
That you did nothing for.
Right, that yeah. you did nothing for. And the logic that Chuck Grassley used to explain it was pretty amazing. He said, quote, "I think not having the estate tax recognizes the people that are investing." This is in a quote to the Des Moines Register. He said, "As opposed to those that are just spending every darn penny they have, whether it's on booze or women or movies." So what he's saying there is, we're giving money to people who will invest it, these people who are inheriting millions of dollars from their parents and have never had to work for that money at all. And we're taking it away from, you know, people who, and this is how he views the rest of us, basically, the rest of the world, are people who spend their money on booze, women, or movies is such a weird throw in there.
That's the odd man
out.
Well,
they are expensive these days.
Yeah.
That is true.
Maybe he's trying to circle back and just, like, take a slam. It's like, you know, oh, $20 to go to the movies?
It's a setup move. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when it used to cost a nickel.
Right.
Which, is, by the way, is the only money you'll be getting. You'll be getting paid in nickels from now on, thanks to the new Republican tax plan.
So it really gets at what is wrong with a lot of the logic with this tax plan. So people who invest their money, he's talking about, you know, stocks and, you know, the market. 51% of families in America owned stocks in 2016, which is, you know, not that bad. But when you look at how much is owned by the richest, the top 1% of households by wealth owned 38% of all stock shares.
Yeah.
1% of households own 38%. So he's saying we need to give more money to that top 1% so that they can invest it. But that only helps them and the stock market. And it's all part of this idea that by making the obscenely rich more obscenely rich, you're going to stimulate the economy somehow. But, I mean, as the estate tax and their anger at the estate tax proves, they just want to keep the money for themselves and for the people in their family.
Yeah, there's nothing about upward mobility or anything in this bill. Like,
right.
When you look at, like, boom and bust cycles of the economy, like, we're in a good time right now, and unemployment's low, the stock market's doing great, rich people are getting fucking richer.
Yeah.
A tax cut is, like, the absolute opposite of what is normal.
There's already insane problems with, you know, wealth distribution.
Yeah.
The top 20% of Americans own 92% of the stock. So that money is not going anywhere.
And well, we need to talk about also there's a guy named Matt Brunick who's a fantastic writer. You should follow him if you're still in hell on Twitter. he runs a leftist think tank called the People's Policy Project. Mm-hmm. And he talks a lot about the passivity of income. The idea that when you talk about investing, because we're not taught this in schools, and the Democrats have done a really poor job of, like, ideologically talking about what exactly is an investment. And this idea that these people are simply creating wealth by having wealth.
Right.
There's no work. There's no motivation. There's nothing that benefits society. You're not creating a product. You're not creating a service. And you're not putting this money back into the economy. What it is welfare. What it is we need to start looking at things like this, the way that the Republicans have gotten white, lower class, working class, middle class people to look at welfare moms and food stamps and shit like that. That's what this is. This is just a band-aid to allow people who don't work to not work more. And it's way worse than welfare because you see welfare be put back into the economy.
Right.
Like these people that like need food stamps aren't sitting
on
like, their
food
stamps.
I got
hoarding
a mad collection of EBT
cards.
Right. Like,
yeah, look at all these rollover like, dollars. Like,
yeah.
You know?
No, that's a very pervasive myth, the idea that people on welfare just sit back and collect welfare and spend it on booze, women, and movies.
But then you look at the money, like what, the extra $9 million that somebody's going to get because their fucking uncle died?
Right.
Like, how are they going to spend that money?
They're going to fucking sit on it.
You know about my favorite thing is the one Koch brother who's the least evil Koch brother.
The one that's gay?
Fred,
I think is his name.
The one they thought was gay
because he
didn't enjoy just smashing people.
Right. Yeah. So he owns a tiny town. Did you know that? He owns like a Western ghost town. And he just like walks around in his ghost town as like sheriff of Tiny Town.
Really?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Talk about nerds.
Tiny Town, like, are the people there small?
I just call it Tiny Town because it's so funny to think.
But he has like a little setup Western town.
It's a ghost town. It's like an old West town. And I don't know if he like hires people to like cosplay Westworld and shit in there.
That's amazing.
But yeah, if you look up like Koch Brothers ghost town, and it's like, okay, how is this helping giving this dude enough money to create fucking Westworld for himself.
He's creating ghost jobs, though, for that ghost town. That town didn't see jobs in who knows how long.
Ghost jobs? There haven't been ghost jobs in here in 40 years.
That was neat.
Ghost jobs, mister.
But yeah, again, the other thing, too, is just to think, again, we're in a good time, right? The economy is strong. We can afford to invest this money in infrastructure or things that we sorely need, which actually creates jobs, which actually creates some kind of wealth for other people. That's why, like, it's so crazy to try and wrap your head around what the motivations are of the people in the Senate.
Oh, it's easy to wrap your head around.
I mean,
they
just
want to be rich and they want their friends
I guess,
that pay them
I guess
to
it's
be
so,
rich.
That maybe makes me just such a, like, out there stupid idiot that, like, I just feel like that's wrong. That I'm like, how could you look at other people and be like, nah, fam, we're going to fucking sit on this money and, like, just keep it to ourselves. It's
I think it's easy because that's how the system works. Like, Lindsey Graham himself said, we need to get this passed or else our donors won't return our phone calls.
Right.
Like, he just outright admitted it because
but that means
I don't think anybody...
You're not even... You've lost your fucking humanity.
Well,
of course
just
they
think
have.
That that's how the system works.
But you think about it, right? So, like, maybe some senators used to be poor. Maybe.
Right.
I'm going to say a small amount of them used to be
Orrin
poor.
Orrin Hatch was... Surprisingly.
Okay. So how long, though, has he been?
900 years he's been in
exactly.
Senate.
Exactly. So you get to this place, and we were talking about it with, like, my critique of Tina Fey, where it's like these people only see other rich people, and the Beltway is so insular that they only see rich media people, and that's why they all hang out and party with each other, because this is all a joke, because they don't ever see – none of their kids are addicted to opiates, and they're not losing their houses. And
well, and if they are, they're probably keeping it quiet and getting them the best treatment possible.
Exactly, because they can afford it because of their wonderful health insurance.
Right.
Yeah, and so it's this idea of, like, we don't have any bearing. Like we don't see the outcome of this because everything is such a perfectly carefully staged photo op with their constituents, which is what made the healthcare thing so great is these town halls. Like, for the first
people
time in my
up.
Lifetime, people showed up and, like, treated politicians how they're supposed to be treated.
Like greedy fucks.
Yeah, you're supposed to hate your boss. You're supposed to hate your local politicians. You're not supposed to love politicians. And, like, that's been a big problem of America. And I think Trump's helping us with that. That's the one good thing he's done.
Right. Yeah. No, nobody's going to be like, ah.
I love the president.
Yeah,
fuck that. You're supposed to hate the president.
Roy Moore. Have you heard about this guy? This Roy Moore fella.
He's a cowboy, right? Fighting for the underdog. I don't know much else about him.
So we have some great audio of interviews with his spokesperson, because I feel like they're creating new levels of, like, logic puzzles of, like, how to deny something. It's actually somewhat impressive. So we're going to listen to his spokeswoman talking to a CNN reporter.
He left the room and came back in wearing
his
white underwear. And he touched me over my clothing, what was left of it. And he tried to get me to touch him as well.
Do you believe her?
I don't believe her at all, and I'll tell you why. Not only was she sought after by the Washington Post, her own mother doesn't believe elements of her story. We need to make it clear that there's a group of non-accusers that have not accused a judge of any sexual misconduct or anything illegal.
So, yeah, that was edited. That was her initial, rebuttal. And then we moved forward to her second argument, her second defense, which is, but look at all the women who haven't accused him of rape.
Yeah.
There's, like, billions.
Yeah, that would put that – that's a big number.
Yeah, and if we're talking, dead and alive, that's trillions of women. I think he's fine.
Yeah.
God, people that haven't accused him, Mother Teresa, Princess Diana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
never,
lots of famous
never made
ones.
A move on the princess. Exactly. Who didn't like the princess?
Right.
So that's – I mean, yeah. What the fuck – like, that's the kind of shit – like, that's literally from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Where, like, Milhouse was, like, wearing a tutu, and he was like, Bart, but what about the times I didn't wear a tutu? Like – We're entering territory where, like, these used to be jokes.
Yeah.
Right.
Like when you had, like, a shitty lawyer or something.
Right.
And now these
joke logic.
Yeah, people are applying this in real life. That is fucking scary.
Yeah, they just need his vote so bad that it's just at this point, the comedy writer in me just wants him to be on camera, like, just masturbating and talking about, like, his lovely penis tattoos.
Right.
Say Jesus the Lord or whatever,
right.
Like You know, God is my shepherd or whatever. And just to see what they have to, because they're just in this position where they have to.
To defend
him. They have
right.
to defend him. And they're all in. The right. RNC has gone ahead and yeah. endorsed him.
Mitch McConnell, like, walked it back too. Like,
yep.
It's pretty disturbing.
Yep. They're like, look, what's more important? You know,
these tax cuts.
Women's lives, these tax cuts for the 1%.
Yeah. Mitch McConnell did the old. The people of Alabama have
we'll
to decide.
Let the people of Alabama Trump, decide.
Trump came in and officially endorsed him, as did the RNC. The Hill just released an Alabama poll saying Jones actually so his opponent actually leads more by 4 points, according to one Alabama poll. But a lot of polls that we've been hearing
was it
from
like 52-48 or
that's,
something.
That's the first one I've heard with him in the lead.
Yeah, that is.
You know,
there was 48-44.
Oh, there was another one that DeRay McKesson retweeted. It was like an image where the math added up to 104%. It was like 56-48.
Hey, they're giving their all. They're yeah, really right, they're right, almost right. to 110%.
Yeah, right.
You know, as a coach would say.
And then later on in that interview, or I think in the beginning of that interview with Poppy Harlow of CNN, the spokeswoman just comes out swinging. To preempt everything. So I think this is a clip because
Poppy, an interesting
Poppy Harlow is pregnant, for those that don't know. So this plays into what Roy Moore's spokeswoman was saying to her to start that interview.
And let me get right to it.
So thank you. It's great to be with you. And by the way, congratulations on your unborn child. That's the reason why I came down as a volunteer to speak for Judge Roy Moore, because he'll stand for the rights of babies like yours in the womb, where his opponent will support killing them up until the moment of birth.
Right. Who will actually come for your fetus. I don't know if you've interviewed him, but he will actively try and kill your fetus.
Extract your fetus and spike it like a football.
And that's the double standard they're creating, as if that's with the left's agenda. It's like, yeah, okay, he molested little girls, sure, but they want to come and end your pregnancy. Like,
right.
No one wants that.
No.
Nobody wants that.
Abortion works, you guys?
No.
I mean, look, the election is, what, a week from today?
Yeah.
So let's let the people of Alabama decide. Show us that you're on the right side,
please,
Alabama. Come on now.
Please do not vote for Roy Moore. He was banned from a mall.
Yeah.
From a mall.
It's like classic pedophile stuff.
That's insane.
Not allowed in a mall, near schools, or near circuses.
Weed dealers don't even get banned from the mall. They're just like, I don't want to see you hanging around this part.
I don't want that
court.
Smell coming off you, Travis.
Right. Dude, if you're smart, you work at Brookstone, Poppy. Come on. You leave the weed bag in the massage chair. You come in, you sit, you leave your 20, and you're out. Come on.
Stash box.
Yeah,
doesn't
exactly.
know how to do
that. Didn't sell weed at the mall? Come on now.
Come on. We gave you the college football playoffs, Alabama.
Yes, come on.
Just give us
a Democratic
senator.
Give
the rest of the country a fucking win.
Yeah.
All right. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. Enough of the dark stuff. Let's talk about one of the most horrifying scenarios facing the world right now. We wanted to talk about artificial intelligence and
great movie.
This sort of looming
Stanley Kubrick, what a neckbeard.
This sort of looming possibility that artificial intelligence is going to take over jobs. There are some estimates that say 73 million jobs in the United States could be replaced by robots in the not too distant future. Jobs that, you know, I didn't think could be, like accountant and like tax preparer and stuff like that, like stuff that I assumed was pretty complicated, they're saying could potentially be taken over by artificial intelligence.
Like tax preparation is like, I think, one of the most vulnerable ones.
Yeah.
Like, because we already use TurboTax.
Right.
We're already not fucking with walking into a H&R Block and like, hi, right. can you do something with this?
Right.
Hello, can you help me, please? I am dumb about numbers.
Which you can actually even tell because the way they're spending money on their advertisements is crazy. Like the celebrities that they have in these like tax preparation commercials, you're like, what is going on? You're like, oh, they're in their death throes.
Yeah.
Right. So they're doing anything they can.
And right.
H&R Blockbuster video, dude.
And the idea is basically, so you take a company that has lots of human capital like H&R Block and you replace it with a company that is just a guy that programmed a thing.
Right.
And so all this money that was going to all these tax attorneys and accountants is now going to like two tech trillionaires. So one side of the equation is this could be the apocalypse and, you know, we're not going to have employment in the future. And what are we going to do? It's going to look like a 80s dystopian sci-fi future. But then another side, I read an Economist article that was like, yeah, but you can actually pull out articles from the late 19th century and other times throughout history where people thought the same thing was going to happen.
Yeah, like the Luddites were fucking smashing up printing presses.
You know, instead of technology just taking over the world and everybody losing their job, what happened was technology took over certain jobs, but it created different jobs. So some people, like the Economist in this article I recently read, argues that that's what will continue to happen. We won't have a complete break from history. AI will just take the jobs that exist now, create new jobs that we can't possibly conceive of. But there are reasons to think that might not be the case this time around. You know, Facebook and Twitter are taking, you know, news distribution jobs, and they're not replacing them. You know, they become multi-billion dollar companies that, you know, six shareholders get really rich, and, you know, that could be run by a handful of people. But the difference that I see is that the Luddites didn't know shit about printing presses. Right. They just came in. They were like a sect.
They're like,
that
yeah,
was
fuck
like,
this thing.
Yeah. Right. Whereas the people who are saying that we need to, you know, start thinking about this possibility are the people who know the most.
It's right.
Like,
right.
It's
right,
like
right.
Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg. It's like the people who are like, oh, at you guys
wheel.
Don't know what we can do.
Yeah.
Like, this right. is coming.
You're like, because I'm looking at it and I'm fucking scared.
Right.
Yeah. I just made it and I'm fucking
I'm like,
tripping hard.
I fucked up really bad.
Yeah.
Right. There's a great New Yorker article from a couple months ago about how Silicon Valley millionaires and billionaires have all taken to survivalism.
Yep.
They're all like, you know, building these island fortresses because I think there is a nascent understanding that this is coming. They take so many of the jobs that there's just an entire hungry underclass that needs to be fed, and
it will look like World War Z, except those zombies are fucking working
just hungry,
yeah,
right,
just fucking coming through your city,
right?
Yeah.
So some of the solutions to this that have been suggested are
nukes,
just end it all, or a universal basic income,
yeah,
which is it's something that's been tested out, but Josh, as a leftist, as
yes.
our resident leftist, can you explain the idea of UBI?
Sure. And granted, I'm not an expert, but I've read a lot of articles.
That makes you an expert on this show.
Hell yeah, dude. So UBI, it was in a series of books by James S.A. Corey. It's the first time I saw it. But the idea that we are rich enough to give everybody essentially negative tax. Instead of you paying money in taxes, everybody gets like a median standard like of living income. 30 grand, let's
right.
say. Let's put it at 30 grand. The idea being that the reason why we created these robots is so that we as a society could be benefited and wouldn't have to toil
right.
all day in a society dominated by work for work's sake. And that's what you're seeing now in late capitalism is, I mean, I know everybody that's listening to this has or currently is doing a job that is mostly redundant, where, you know, you're just like, I don't need to be doing this technically, or I could be doing this from home remotely.
Right.
And we're all just kind of just going through the motions. And so the idea would be like, there is enough food for everybody. There's enough fucking money for everybody. And UBI is sort of an attempt to level the playing field, to be like, okay, well, if you just are an existing person, part of your life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness is a fucking house and heating and air conditioning
right.
and
food.
A fucking food and, yeah, just enough money for basic survival.
Yeah.
So wait, how does the math work? Like, where does the money come from that gets distributed?
So first and foremost, the pockets of the super wealthy. There would be a progressive tax. They would reinstitute things like the fucking estate tax and shit that just makes sense. And then there's so much money in our military budget. We spend two times as much, I believe, as China, which is our next competitor. And so if we halved our security budget, we would still be spending significantly more than any other country.
Right.
And all of that money could go where it belongs, which is into making people's lives better. So between progressive taxes on the wealthy, wealthy, wealthiest, closing corporate loopholes like the fucking Panama Papers shit, actually enforcing that stuff, and then like lowering the military budget by like even, you know, a fraction, you can easily get $30,000 for each American. And it works when it happens. Yeah. You know, there, you see in Alaska, for example, everybody has a universal basic income because of oil money that right. comes through there. So that all gets split among everybody. And Alaska is super fucking Republican, but you try to take that away from them and they'll lose their goddamn minds. Right. It's literally the most socialist thing that's ever happened in Alaska.
Right.
And the people of Alaska love it. Think of it like Social Security, but for your life.
Wait, they get distributions on the oil that's pumped out of there?
That check.
That's pretty
Everybody gets a check. And you see it happen in like right now there's a lot of tech people that are experimenting with this because they see the writing on the wall that we deserve this. Like the fruits of our labor have produced this excess time, this surplus of time. So what do people do when they have time? And so there's studies right now in like Norway and Scandinavia and like more progressive countries where based on what I've read, the outcomes of these studies are people are better parents and more integrated in their community and start gardening and like doing all these things that make their communities better when they're not, you know, newsflash, chained to a fucking desk all day.
Well, and most people spend their money because they hate their job so much in just whatever ways they can to sort of like
offset.
Distance themselves from like the toil, as you say.
Exactly.
And I think another thing about the UBI is like it's to sort of disentangle this connection between work and quality of life.
Yes.
You know, like, because that's what we're all – whatever your job is, that's going to determine your quality of life.
Right.
And this is to say, you know, let's set a base standard of quality of life.
Right.
And then around that, you know
– and here's a thing. You mentioned like what your job is your quality of life, and that presupposes all of the privilege inherent in why people get certain jobs.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the idea of like, oh, yeah, well, I work at a bank, so I have a lot of money. Well, how did you get to that bank? Where were you set up? Where were you given a head start that gets you? And this, exactly like you said, levels the playing field and makes it so that literally everybody – I mean this attacks poverty at the core and not just symptoms of poverty like something like an earned income tax credit would go after. That's something that the Democrats have means tested to be like, oh, if you're making under $15,000, then you get this. But if you make over $15,000, you get and it's all this convoluted, you know, Obamacare fucking shit. This is – just like Social Security in that everybody fucking gets it and everybody starts at the same place so that you can go be a doctor and cure cancer or go write the most beautiful fucking concerto or raise a happy family, you know.
And not worry about how you're going to do that.
Right. And the one thing that you never see in these stories is somebody going like, yeah, I started heroin. You know, nobody just like sits back and just does nothing because as human beings, we are social creatures and we crave, you know, cooperation. And so this is like a huge blow in the idea of cooperation versus competition.
And that myth is out there that, you know, of the welfare queen, these people who, you know, are on the dole and just sit back and they become, you know, drug addicts. And, you know, there's a famous story where Old Dirty Bastard, like, as he was, like, cashing his checks for, like, his, you know, number one selling album, like, went and cashed his welfare check. And I think those stories are famous because, like, for a reason, because powerful people don't want us to think that, you know, sitting back and, you know, having money handed to us is a valid way for a society to function. But actually, when you look at how charities work in other countries, when you just give people money, this is like the one thing that charities never do because charities, it's more fun to be like, oh, I gave this farmer a cow. And like, isn't that clever that I was able to do that? If you instead give that farmer $30 or however much a cow costs, I'm way out of the cow market in Africa.
You just showed your ass.
but, you know, that is actually way more beneficial to him because he can, you know, he knows what he needs.
Exactly.
He knows what the job.
I don't need a fucking cow. I need a water.
I need, I need a fucking
I need a
cell
shovel
phone.
To dig for fucking water. Yeah.
Right.
I need a cell phone to call. Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, that's just been shown time and again that if you give people cash, that they know what to do with it, and they're rarely going to just sit back and, you know, be shitty citizens.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure there are people who are just like,
yeah, there are,
that, but that's not the majority or like, no, necessarily a large share of it.
And that also has nothing to do with class.
Right.
It's an internal, like, borderline personality disorder or whatever. You know, there's just as many fucking rich people that would just sit around and do
nothing. Like, oh, I'm going to spend everything.
Right. So, you know, there's this idea that maybe we will be existing in a post-work world fairly soon.
We should.
And I mean, we're kind of like, Facebook is a good example of this because, you know, it's taken over how we get our information completely. And, you know, there are very few people getting rich off of that. And also you were talking about like where you get your head start. All of these internet, you know, monopolies were built on the back of tax-funded, you know, government. The government created the internet and laid the foundation for the internet. So, like, this is all stuff that, you know, the public invested in, and then a handful of people are becoming billionaires off of it. So, you know, the idea that the public should get money back is not insane, or as
we
insane as it might sound
we
to
foot
you
the
as
bill.
An American.
We foot the bill for the bailouts. We foot the bill for, you know, like you said, starting the fucking internet. That all came from our tax dollars, and then we don't reap any of the benefits. And another interesting point that you made was the idea that, like, you know, this post-work world, like, I was thinking about it, and really it's only been a couple lifetimes that capitalism as we know it, where, like, your job is tied to your standard of living, like, is the case. Like, you know, I mean, you only have to go back a couple generations to the idea of feudalism, of, you know, like, can you imagine a feudalist, like, looking at, like, the liberalism that swept Napoleonic Europe and just being like, I don't know, if we give these reforms to the people, there's going to be some fucking crazy shit that happens. And it's just, you're in the way of progress.
Right.
Like, and now that we have more information and more power and more resources than ever before, these switches are going to happen faster. And these things are going to evolve faster, and we need to let them evolve. The thing that scares me, though, and this is not to be negative about UBI necessarily, because it's so much better than anything else we have on the table right now. The thing that scares me is a Huey Long situation. Do you know Huey Long, the kingfish?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the idea that, for those of you that don't know, basically here was this guy who was the governor of Louisiana, who saw that rural white folks in Louisiana weren't learning how to read because the schools charged for books. So he nationalized, basically, whatever. He foot the bill for all the books, taught an entire generation of people how to read, and then, like, put in electricity in the rural areas, and everybody fucking loved him because here's this guy. And you look at the same thing with, like, FDR and Social Security, and what happens then is that the people vote for you for fucking ever because you gave them this stuff.
Right.
And so when you gave Huey Long a fucking blank check of voting, he went nuts and became the governor and the senator at the same time and just, like, went on this crazy power trip that ultimately ended in him getting assassinated.
Yeah.
FDR obviously was a better president, but the Democrats were in power in Congress because of Social Security for 30 years. So the thing that scares me is who's going to implement UBI? Because that person will be worshipped.
Right.
And that's why I was so afraid of fucking Steve Bannon, because he seemed like the only dude creative enough to realize that.
Right, and you get the jump on that.
Right.
You know, there is a way to run this whole thing.
Right. If you have a right-leaning autocrat with, like, fascist tendencies, and you give them something like this, then we could be in a situation like Saudi Arabia, where, you know, you have this kingdom that rules with an iron fist on everything, but people generally don't do too much revolting because they're on the dole.
Right.
Because they would not have money otherwise, because there is, like, a weird, you know, sort of like petro-state UBI that goes on in Saudi Arabia. So, like, UBI in general, in a vacuum, is a great idea. We just need to make sure that it's being implemented for the right reasons by the right people.
Right.
And making it so that it's still not impossible to jump into power. You know, because this could be seen as a way to allow your Peter Thiels, your Elon Musks, and you know, Young Zucks to fucking still maintain power by pacifying all of us.
I am just getting this in now. We have established a connection with Jack O'Brien, who is reporting live from the fire-stricken part of Los Angeles right now. Jack, are you there?
Miles, this is Jack. I'm here in the Los Angeles area. I don't know if you can hear me. Fires are raging, I'm told, over by my house, but I'm safe about 10 miles away, so I don't know why I'm talking
why
like
that. Why are you screaming? Yeah, that's...
I don't know. It just seems like what people do whenever you, like, throw to them in the field and there's a disaster going on.
Again, we still have people, you know, like, you're not obviously not in studio because, yes, you had to evacuate your home because of the fires here in L.A.
Yeah.
And you sound very relaxed for someone who had to evacuate, but you're okay, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been up since my parents called me this morning at like 4:30 and, you know, from the East Coast, and they were aware of this before I was,
right,
which is a great testament to what a provider and protector I am of my household, that they are like 1,000 miles away and we're like, hey, your neighborhood's on fire.
And you're like, huh?
But I was like,
how do you know?
Your neighborhood's on fire, Dad. God. But then I went out into my front yard and looked, and you know, we live kind of right on the mountain/hill that goes over into the valley, and it was glowing, like you could see it glowing, and there was, you know, smoke kind of billowing over, just a big, looked almost like a patch of fog. So yeah, we got all our stuff together. I am fortunate to have an amazing aunt and uncle who live further east in Los Angeles, and we just took the family and the dog over there. And then I drove back and did all the stuff you're supposed to do. I didn't know about this.
What did you do?
You're supposed to water your house. Like I basically took our backyard hose and like hosed down our whole house. I unkinked my hose. So that's probably another reason I sound relaxed, is like a lot of the stuff that I was doing was very not like, didn't feel urgent or, you know, like I was in an emergency. I was like sitting in my backyard, like untangling my hose. And, you know, eventually got it unkinked. You're supposed to like have them laid out and then turn all the lights on outside of your house. And then I continued to just grab random things. Like I think I have one pair of pants and all of my t-shirts for some reason. And
those valuable phrase tees.
Right. I assume you brought all your sneakers.
I don't even have my Jordans. Yeah. Wow. Couldn't find my Jordans and I couldn't find my passport. Those were the two most important things.
Uh-oh. Well, how will anyone know that you're an international player?
I know, exactly. I mean, my Jordans are kind of my passport when you think about it.
That lets people know you're locally respected.
Right. But yeah, so as I was leaving my house, there was ash kind of snowing down. And you could see helicopters kind of circling. We're basically across the street from, we're on the south side of Sunset, and the north side of Sunset had been evacuated, and you could see like these big cool planes with fire retardant just circling in, getting ready to dump the stuff. So it was pretty, I don't know, pretty dramatic morning.
Guess you live below Sunset?
Yes, like,
I don't know if you remember Clueless, when she gets real mad, when she says, when she calls her housekeeper Mexican, and she's like, she's from El Salvador. And she's like, what's the difference? And then Paul Rudd's like, you get mad when people think you live below Sunset. That's a deep cut that I had to just shoehorn in there because
that is a deep cut.
I think it's the second Clueless reference we made.
I'm on the wrong side of the tracks from Bel Air. Like the Bel Air people look down on my neighborhood, and you know, it's pretty tough, pretty badass.
I know like today we almost had to convince you to like just focus on evacuating and doing everything because you were so like dedicated to coming in, or at least calling in to do most of the show. But are you like, so other than that, like other than obviously the imminent danger that your home is in, you're feeling good, or did like the fire department give you any assurances or any ideas of sort of what the situation could look like?
So I didn't talk to anyone. My neighbors talked to a cop who said that he thought our neighborhood should be okay. We're basically right now sort of command central, where all the fire chiefs and police chiefs are hanging out and, you know, figuring out next steps is, you know, a stone's throw from where I live. So that's somewhat reassuring, assuming they don't have to, you know, double back and change where command central is. I think we should be all right. And that's what they said, we should be all right. But, you know, there's this thing in Los Angeles. So Los Angeles, people from Los Angeles love to brag about how it's always 72. And it's true, but there's the one kind of bad piece of weather that I didn't know about heading into living here is these things called the Santa Ana winds.
Yes. Right.
Which it's these just crazy strong winds that are unlike, you know, I've lived all over America and they're kind of unlike anything I've ever experienced anywhere else. Like, they're winds that actually make you have to slow down when you're driving. They're because they kick up dust and
right.
also like push your car around the street. I'm not telling you guys, but, you know, people who might not have lived in Los Angeles during this time of the year. And those are going on right now. And, you know, this is just somewhat unprecedented for there to be wildfires at the same time as Santa Ana winds, because wildfires are usually not going on in December. But because of global warming or you know, naturally occurring climate change, whatever you choose to believe. But I mean, obviously it's man-made.
You shouldn't choose climate to believe change. That unless you're a fucking
right.
asshole.
Yeah. Depending on if you're a complete fucking asshole or not. but so because of that, there are wildfires at a time at the same time as like these crazy winds that normally like blow cars all over the street. So
right.
those are supposed to kick up later tonight, and then who the fuck knows what's going to happen.
Well, you know, I think earlier when before you came on, I was like, we're not really a thoughts and prayers kind of show, but this is definitely a time for everybody, you know, send the vibes to protect Jack's house, his family, and many people in LA, man. Like, it's not just LA, it's Ventura County, it's San Bernardino. So all the listeners out there, if we can collectively send good thoughts, good vibrations, maybe we could fight the fire.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll probably work.
I know, there's no scientific evidence to back that, but I just had a granola bar and I'm feeling good about that.
All right. Cool. Well, yeah, I'll probably be back in studio tomorrow. Hopefully I'm not like standing in front of my house with a garden hose, like facing down fire, like Lieutenant Dan cursing at God, but yeah, we'll see.
To be honest, I don't think the firefighters would let you fight the fire. But yes, I'm thinking you're going to be in studio tomorrow. I'm feeling it.
Cool. All right, guys.
Well, thank you so much to our on-field correspondent, junior reporter Jack O'Brien, for calling into the main studio, the mothership.
Back to you, Miles and Anna. I just wanted to say that.
Stay safe out there.
Hey. That sounded so official.
Sounded so sincere, too. All right, Jack, be safe.
Bye.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break and be right back.
And we're back. All right, guys, it's Benghazi watch time.
Benghazi!
So there's all sorts of things happening in the world of Benghazi. The women of Benghazi are Times Person of the Year.
Hey!
Times Peoples of the Year. This is presumably because Trump turned them down, as he said.
Yeah, which is completely not the way. That's like how Time, they had to come back and be like, yeah, that's not how it works.
Yeah, until that issue hits the stands, nobody knows who the person of the year is.
Right, and then you only know the runner-up after the fact.
Right.
Did you know he's a runner-up?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's number
one. But for destroying the presidency, it's not even like for being crazy. Like, it's all just about like, oh, we've never seen someone so off the rails and like unfiltered. It's not like, because he's doing a great job.
He is all over the person of the year story for being a sexual abuser.
Right.
They interview a bunch of the women who he sexually abused. And then they also talk about this theory that I've actually heard brought up just in conversations with people, the idea that we wouldn't be having this movement of women coming out and, you know, saying that they had been abused if it weren't for Trump winning. But
1,000% I agree with that.
Yeah, because of the Women's March and then just because of, you know, this public sort of shaming of women by Trump and by his followers, you know, they were motivated to kind of step out. And yeah, I totally believe that.
I mean, it was a moral rock bottom, right? It's like, I remember when that tape came out, everyone was like, this is it.
This is it.
It's a wrap.
Right.
And then to
bring
watch
in
that,
Pence to close.
Yeah. So then to watch it just like, you know, still go through was just like, oh, wow, okay. Niggas really don't care. Like,
we're there?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people were just like, nah, we can't let this happen. And that's why the pendulum is swinging so hard the other way.
It was wild. There's an article that came out, I think last week or this week, about how Pence basically was like, after that tape came out, he's like, you know, I can run with Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like, an Atlantic article about how he basically had a soft coup ready to go.
Right.
And then Trump had his second debate where he just like stalked Hillary around the stage.
That
like
was
he was
so
fucking
crazy.
Jason Voorhees. Right. And people were like, yeah.
We love it.
We love it. We like this sort of menacing energy.
He's doubling down on making women uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that coup went away. But Pence has always just kind of been in the background, just ready to step in. Like,
yeah.
The second if Trump is like, you know, taken down by Mueller or like an assassin or whatever, Pence is going to just like pop up out of the bushes and be like, oh, hey, what's up?
Did something happen?
Didn't see you there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a bag packed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
also another thing that came out. Someone tweeted a thing about how he's, you know, increasingly under pressure because of the Russia probe. And they juxtaposed that with an article that came out a few years ago about when he was in a frat, he ratted out his frat brothers because they had a keg. And they're like, oh, I wonder how this is going to go.
Pence
like,
did?
Yeah.
Like that's amazing.
Couldn't even keep his mouth shut to print his fraternity.
That was like
over
New York Times or something like that.
Yeah,
that
I think
story.
So.
Yeah, but.
That's the best.
I hope he rats. Hell
of course.
Yeah.
We just fucking, let's find out everything.
If
but anyway.
He rats, he can come to the cookout at my house.
So back to the persons of the year. So Trump did come in second for, not for any great accomplishments. It's basically for the same reasons that made him person of the year last year. They were like, he has changed the presidency with the passing feuds, the wild accusations, the crude and divisive language. It's like, yeah, he had also changed how presidential elections are, you know, conducted in last year. And that's what made him time person of the year. So even though he's technically probably the person who, you know, when you think of this year in history books, you're going to think of all the damage that was done by him. You know, it's the same article as last year. You can't. You
yeah,
know,
it doesn't change. But you just add more fuckery
right,
to the list.
Exactly.
And also keep in mind, remember when Hitler was person of the year,
right.
too.
So. Hitler won it twice, but he didn't win it twice consecutively.
No.
Think.
Yeah, he didn't
they
go
back
to back.
They were like, people are over this Hitler stuff. Let's move on. I think they went Stalin.
That reminds me of a Kanye West performance. He was on like VH1 Storytellers and he was doing a song Amazing and he did a speech afterwards and he was just like naming people. He was just like, Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson, James Brown, O.J. Simpson. And then like the audience kind of goes, whoa, like O.J. Simpson. And he's like, but wasn't he amazing? Think about what he did. Is that not amazing? And I think like that's what this whole Trump thing kind of reminds me of is like them, like they're just like, you got to kind of just give credit where credit's due and like, the amount of shit he's fucked up now is phenomenal to think about.
No, he has definitely changed the entire political landscape and geopolitical landscape considering like our allies are like fleeing and we're further causing more chaos just by him saying shit.
Yeah.
So
Trump truly is the white O.J. Simpson, we can say, I think.
Yeah. It'll be on his
but with not as good film appearances.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because let's really give it
up. Yeah, he sucked in Home Alone too.
Like, yeah, he was terrible.
Honestly, he was really,
he just
really
caught
bad.
Kevin in the Plaza Hotel lobby. That's
right.
it. He's not like OJ out here building an OD gun out of like a little suitcase and turned into like an anti-aircraft gun and Naked Gun, what, two or mm-hmm. three? 33 and a third?
Yeah. He's
what
got one speed, and
Trump
that's
was
it.
In Little Man, though.
Ooh.
Second runner-up was Chinese President Xi Jinping, and coming in fourth was Robert Mueller. So those are the people of the year.
But also, let's not also, I mean, I have to call this out. Taylor Swift is also on that cover. And I'm not saying she shouldn't be because there are plenty of reasons why she actually should be. She successfully countersued someone that sexually assaulted her. I think that's great. I think, and she handled everything really well.
Probably my favorite thing she's ever done other than Shake It Off.
No, well, yeah, that's for you. Yeah.
That's for you, Jack.
To me, I'm like, yes, that's credit where credit is due. And I think a lot of people too have been on the internet kind of like, what is she doing there? Because she also has a history of like silencing people too. So it makes, I don't know if it makes her problematic, but it's interesting that, you know, I think some people have really taken issue to the fact.
What do you mean by silencing people?
So remember, like, there was that blogger who was like, hey, when are you going to come out and tell people you're not a white supremacist, or like, you don't want to be associated with like this Aryan, you know, ideal? Cause I think they called her.
They use her as like the ideal woman a lot.
Right.
Like,
the Aryans do, yeah.
Our Aryans are outright people. Like, they use her as like an idol.
They're, yeah,
like,
it was
Hitler and Taylor Swift.
It's because,
are,
yeah,
two
they
ideal
call
people.
Her a quote, pure Aryan goddess.
Right.
And so then, right after that, the lawyer like demanded a retraction and a deletion and all this other shit. When like that's, you know, that's not her saying she's a Nazi. That's just someone being critical or vocal about what they feel that her place is. And
oh, Taylor Swift's lawyer came out and was like, "You better take that."
And
down.
And the ACLU was like, "No, no, 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 no."
Right.
Like, that's not how this works. But anyway,
this might make people upset, but I don't know. I feel like I have to say it's. I think Taylor Swift is a perfect example of how people are willing to swallow racism in the name of feminism. And it shit kind of pisses me off sometimes. But, like, she does a lot of racist shit. Like, not only that stuff, but her attacks against a lot of black people, her cultural appropriation. But I think people are just like, yeah, but she's like a female icon. And it's like, that's dope, dude. But, like, I would never accept a black icon, for example, like Chris Brown. Probably what he did for, like, black artists, phenomenal. But I'm just like, I can't respect that because of what he's done against women. I don't understand why that's not a thing for feminism. It's like, people are willing to accept her because she's such a feminist icon, but they just like be like, we're just going to ignore that racism. Kind of reminds me of a former presidential candidate, which shit kind of pisses me off. But like, it, I don't know. It's, I thought it was whack to put her on there.
I think that's a very fair critique.
Hot takes on feminism from three dudes.
Yeah, exactly. Wanted to talk about the Rand Paul saga, the mystery surrounding Rand Paul getting his ass whooped by his neighbor. So he was mowing his lawn, and his neighbor apparently just came up and
jumped him,
beat the shit out of him. His neighbor, also a doctor, was, I think, like in his 50s, maybe.
Yeah, and he broke, I think, 5 or 6 of Rand Paul's ribs.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Just a straight ass kicking. And so, allegedly, the thing that they've said is that, oh, it was about a dispute because Rand Paul, when he mowed his lawn, his clippings would go onto his neighbor's lawn, and like that pissed his neighbor off. But neither of them have commented on it. That's like what through spokespeople, and they just have kept really like mysteriously quiet about it. So I don't know. It's just one of those interesting stories that I don't totally trust it. I think.
I mean, on one side, right, like some people say this has been going on for years that he's like, yo, your riding mower keeps blowing clippings onto my fucking property and you need to clean it. Rand Paul's like, dude, I don't give a fuck. And I think so. One narrative is like that's been going on for so many years that finally this dude just broke and was like, that's it. I'm like, you're going to catch these hands. But the other one is maybe there's a much darker story that we don't know about. And that's the one I'm hoping it is because I don't want this to be about two middle-aged dudes fighting over yard clippings.
Right.
I want it to be like intrigue and affairs and lust or something.
I mean, this sounds like a movie, really. Like it's like a Coen Brothers movie where he wakes up every day and sees this dude just blowing on his lawn and then he goes to work and he's emasculated at work.
Right.
He comes back and his wife's just like, I'm probably going to go to bed.
Right.
I'm tired.
Yeah. And then he just keeps watching this dude mow on his lawn. And then
I'm going on a baby moon with Rand.
What
the fuck?
And that's
he steps out and is like, get your clippings off my lawn.
Sure.
I don't give a fuck.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. This beats this nigga's ass. That shit's funny as fuck.
That is my theory, is that something happened. The mowing of another man's lawn was metaphorical rather than literal.
Yep.
Oh my God.
It's just worth keeping an eye on. All right, that's going to do it for this week's weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.